Pitchers and catchers have officially reported, guys, it's baseball season. Let's go. Good evening, everybody. It is Thursday, February 13th, and welcome to episode 233 of Buds and Blue Jays. It's your place for all things related to the Toronto Blue Jays. Jesse Burrell joined back again by Jesse Tricio. Glad to have you back, my man. And today on the show, we are going to celebrate pitchers and catchers reporting. We have a lot of news that came out of Blue Jays camp. We will dive into all of that, including comments that Ross Atkins has made about a Vladimir Guerrero Jr. extension, some thoughts about John Schneider and the lineup going forward, and so, so much more. Plus, we take our final look back at the offseason that just was. Did the Blue Jays did enough? Are the moves we made going to be good enough to take us over the hump? And what is our favorite under-the-radar move that the Blue Jays made this offseason that could pay big dividends going forward? But first, before we get into all that, Jesse, glad to have you back, my man. Welcome back to the show. Pitchers and catchers have reported. How are you feeling?
A little worse for wear. Like, I'm definitely not in the best shape of my life after last night stepping on my daughter's toy and going down the stairs. Who would have thought a toy and stairs be a bad combination?
So, Jesse, you're starting the baseball season on the 60-day IL. You got a little ankle injury going on here. But, you know, it's spring training for all of us.
Exactly. Well, we may have a little blizzard here, but what seeing the pitchers and catchers report, and you can smell spring in the air.
Seeing pictures on the timeline of Dunedin, Florida have absolutely boosted my mood. I am beyond excited. It is officially baseball season. Just waking up, knowing that we can see the nice bright sun, you know, the view of what is TD Ballpark there down in Dunedin. Well, we're looking outside our windows and like, there's like a foot of snow outside, but you nailed it, my guy. Very, very good. Let's just dive right into this and dive into what we saw coming out from our first day of camp. And Jesse, there's a lot that went into this. The first thing I took away is that we got our first look at Max Scherzer in Blue Jay blue. And if you give me a second, I'll pull up the photo here. But Jesse, like, how did it look? What did you think of finally seeing Max Scherzer, a Toronto Blue Jay?
Well, first picture I saw of him was he had the wrong team on his bag. So, like, I don't understand why. Like, can someone from PR or HR, like, send him a bag so he doesn't have a Texas bag coming into Dunedin? I understand it's a T, so you can't say it for Toronto, but that's a little bit of a offside there, going in hockey terms there. Like, other than that, it's crazy to see and like just seeing all the pictures watching him when they were showing his bullpen session from Keegan, just showing like all of them just watching and like studying him, and mm-hmm. It's like that's what we brought him in for, is to be that like professor.
I will say Max Scherzer, the dark Blue Jay blue does look sharp, I will say. It almost feels like it fits. And if you look at his cleats, too, that you can see in the photo I have up here, nice blue. He's got a little bit of red, just like the glove, just like the Blue Jays logo. Seems like it was meant to be. I'm with you, my guy. Always good to see Max Scherzer pitch. And if you notice the reports that we've seen from some of the media members, like Bowden Francis apparently was taking a very big look in with Max Scherzer. And I think we talked about that when we signed Max Scherzer. That's the pairing we want to see. A guy like Bowden Francis would learn so much from Max Scherzer, and it seems like it's already happening already.
No, exactly. And like, even Manoah was like, they showed him in the background just mm-hmm. watching him. It's like, he will take a lot too to learn from Scherzer too.
Great. Very excited to see how it all shapes out. But Jesse, it wouldn't be spring training without getting our official best shape of their life report. And you're already dealing with your ankle injury. It's not the best shape of your life right now. I'm a little tired myself after a course of a week. But for some Blue Jays players, it is their best shape of their life. And Jesse, I'm going to show you some pictures here as well, and I might believe them. We've talked a lot this offseason strictly about Alejandro Kirk and how he looks like he's in the best shape of his life, even going through last season, how it looked like he got in better shape as the season has gone on. And it looks like he's taken that step forward with him this year. And I'm going to pull up a photo in a second for those of you who are watching on YouTube. But talk to me a little bit about Alejandro Kirk here, Jesse, because it seems to be really, really good here.
Well, it definitely shows that he's taking it serious to be our number one and primary catcher. Like, he knew he needs to be in peak shape to handle the vigorous of being playing possibly over 120 or more games behind the plate, and also producing offensively. Because like, not knocking him for his like what he was before, but like him having like a bigger stomach and like being as stocky as he was and heavy, definitely probably hindered his bat swing at like bat speed and that. And now being smaller, probably less area to cover and all that, and to get by.
Yeah, and I think it's really going to help with Alejandro Kirk getting able to pull his hands inside his body and being able to get to that inside pitch, which maybe he can drive just a little bit more, which might increase the power output that Alejandro Kirk might have that we saw as a prospect when he first came up in that 2020 season. Maybe this could be good things too. And I'm not one who loves to comment on players' body types. Everybody's body is different. Everything, there's a lot that goes into your body shape and what it looks like. But the one thing it seems like from Alejandro Kirk is that he's actually taking it seriously to put himself in the best physical shape forward, which as a teammate of his, that is what you want to see, because it shows you that this guy is serious about putting stuff together. I love this from Alejandro Kirk, and I really do think his best season in the big leagues, especially at the plate, will be coming this season.
Oh, definitely. And like again, too, he's still really young, and also maybe just like to get rid of that term, like the baby fat, and like really have his body mature and fill out too. Like, so maybe it's just what happens too when you get older with your body maturing and that.
We had another case of some best shape of your life, guys, and there's two in particular that had caught my attention. Bo Bichette. Maybe it's just the haircut, Jesse, but I think Bo Bichette looks really sharp. John Schneider himself even said Bo Bichette looks like Bo Bichette again, which is absolutely fantastic, which is what you want to see, knowing that Bo is one of the big X factors for the Toronto Blue Jays this season. And then the other guy who I thought looked sharp was Kevin Gausman, who at 34 years old looks like he's added some weight. But like, it looks like he's added some good weight, and I'll pull up another photo here of Kevin Gausman, but like, he looks more sturdy and his frame looks more put together, which I think could add to some more strength for him this season, which could maybe, just maybe, get a little bit of extra life on that fastball going in. I'm excited to see Kevin Gausman pitch, but I'll show an image of him here if you have a thought on either of those two, Kevin Gausman or Bo Bichette.
Oh, well, Bo can't get any worse than what he was last year. And also, like, I know it's like, there was someone posted on Twitter, like from rookie year during the bubble when they did their spring training in Toronto, to what he looks like now. It's like you can see his maturity and the growth of muscle. And no, definitely Gausman looks a lot like leaner, like bigger, but also leaner, and like doesn't seem like he has anything that nagging him. And like, yeah, with Bo, like you can see like. With him, like he definitely took this offseason serious. One with the haircut, two, like even like with the his legs and all that too. You can definitely see
look
more
at the legs, buddy. Yeah,
like, I think it almost looks like he's been doing leg day with Barger.
Everyone gets on the Addison Barger workout routine, and then everybody's going to be in the best shape of their life. I love that call. I'm an avid cyclist myself. I go on long bike rides like that. I don't have calves like Bo Bichette has right here. So whatever he's been doing. Holy shit, buddy. Keep it up. Jealous. I want that workout routine.
That's definitely. I definitely you know, can say I'm blessed with some DC cast, but that's years of sports and like and all that, and like a lot of heavy weight training for the legs, but like those are some nice calves.
With you, Bo Bichette. Love it. Might name my fantasy team this year, Bo Bichette's calves. We'll see how that goes. Also worth noting, Zach Pop apparently is in the best shape of his life, but I did not see a picture of Zach Pop, and forgive the media for not trying to put that one out there. All right, let's talk a little bit about some of the quotes that we got from John Schneider and Ross Atkins, and I will start with John Schneider here. He spoke to the media, and he said, basically, glad to be in camp. Everything looks great. My main takeaway from his little media scrum was he was asked about the batting order this year, and he said the batting order is pretty fluid. He hasn't really made that decision yet. The only thing he knows is that he wants Vlad Jr. and Anthony Santander hitting back-to-back in some order, in some way. So, Jesse, a few things from this then. That means he didn't lock in George Springer as a leadoff hitter, which I thought was interesting and definitely noteworthy, as John Schneider has been very stubborn over the course of his tenureship here, putting him there. So I wanted to hear what your thoughts on those things. George Springer not definitely being our leadoff hitter, and then Vlad and Santander hitting back-to-back in our order.
Well, he's definitely been listening to the fans when it comes to both of those topics, because always the same, Springer can't be a leadoff anymore. He isn't the bad one he used to be. And everyone figured that, and assume too, it would have been Vladdy and Santander, and Lacy's listening, say, oh, we like Kirk. They don't like, say, Kirk needs to be behind Vladdy and Santander falls. No, you put your two mashers back to back, and that's literally what he said and needs to be.
Yeah, get your two guys on there and then hope one of them drives you in. And next thing you know, you have a two-run home run. And then your pitchers can pitch easier knowing that they've got a lead to work with. I like that. Jesse, let's take a stab right now before spring training gets underway of our batting order. Now you can choose righty versus lefty or maybe your best nine. And let's not include Dalton Varsho from this, who might not be ready for spring training. Can you just give me your batting order or maybe your top four, top five on how you see this shaking out?
Well, let me think. I would say possibly we put. I would have Class A leading off.
If he makes the team and is an everyday player, right? It depends what they do in center. Yep.
No, exactly, because we don't really know who's going to be our center fielder right now because of all the Varsho injury and stuff like that. Again, I would have Class A, Bo, Vladdy, Santander. Maybe I'll put Springer in the
right
five spot.
And then
Kirk six.
Yeah,
Kirk six, Jimenez seven.
Then it's whoever's playing third for you.
Will Profito eight, and then Ernie nine.
Okay, I'm with you. One, I don't think Jonathan Clase is going to start the year on the team, so there is that. But if he does, I'd probably put him nine, but I don't hate the idea. He does stream like a type of guy out there. I want to see Bo Bichette be our leadoff hitter, right? If a guy who can hit like the way he can, I want to see him in the number one spot. I'm a firm believer of your best hitter should be in your two hole. So that puts Vlad there. That puts Santander three, and then probably Kirk four, although I would like to see a guy with more power. I know I'm putting George Springer like eighth in this lineup. Like he's down there. And I'm kind of buying the Kool-Aid a little bit on Andrés Giménez. I do think he's going to have a little bit of a better year. And whoever is your third baseman, whether it be your Aurelvis Martinez, Will Wagner is your DH or whoever it may be, I'm probably going to hit them pretty high up there in the lineup too. And that's how I would take it out. But it's worth noting. And let's see how George Springer responds when he's not hitting leadoff this year. Now, from the manager to the general manager, Ross Atkins met with the media, and he said a few things, Jesse, that caught my attention. But the very first thing, and what is the biggest story going into camp this year, is about Vladimir Guerrero Jr. He was asked simply, how are things going with that? And we've heard Ross Atkins mumble jumble a lot of bull crap in the past, and it's kind of similar here. But his quote was this. He said, quote, "We've worked extremely hard on keeping Vlad here for a long time. There is desire to that desire is strong, and we will continue to do that." In retrospect, Jose Berríos was also asked about Vlad, and he muttered something along the lines of, "Vlad wants to be here. I've talked to him a lot. He really does want to be here." So it sounds to me like the first time in a long time that both camps are trying to both agree that they both want to be here for a long time. Now it's about finding the dollar. How do you feel about this, Jesse? With we're what, 4 days away from Vlad's extension? Yeah, number four. So how do you think it's going to happen here?
Well, I'm not enjoying watching those Vlad's Instagram stories because of this. But hearing what Berríos is saying, Vlad said he wants to stay here, and now Atkins saying that, it's like just get the pen to paper or finger to tablet nowadays with the technology. Like, just get it done. If you can that. I know everyone thinks Bo's leaving. Like, if you can even get a Bo extension, we're cooking with gas, and then we still have that core that we can have our window open still for some championships.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned Bo Bichette there too, because a lot of us haven't been talking about a Bo extension, but this is a big season for him too. Ross Atkins did bring that up about Bo Bichette going to free agency. He even muttered the lines too of like, Bo is a good player for us too. We are excited. He's also the type of player that we want to keep around. And Ross Atkins mentioned another guy today, aside from Bo and Vlad, about who he might want to lock up long-term. And that was Dalton Varsho. who I thought was a kind of interesting name. So, Jesse, do you have a thought on maybe Varsho being included as maybe an extension candidate this spring?
Well, he is a platinum glove caliber defense or defensive at center fielder. He does have the ability to, like, hit some balls at, like, out of the park and, like, produce defensively. But, like we said in the past, if you are solid up the middle when it comes to catchers, short and second and center, that's a recipe for success. So, like, you have one of the best center fielders in the league, I think you'll be fine. Like, is that, like, fine? And have that until, like, you have your Clauses or Alan Rodon or whatever, or Deson Brown, like, some of those outfield prospects who are center fielders that could possibly make an impact.
Yeah, elite center field defense is actually really hard to find across Major League Baseball this year. And if they can lock Dalton Varsho up before maybe he has an offensive explosion with the bat, that could be really good for the Blue Jays. So I can see where Ross Atkins is thinking that. And then, Jesse, you mentioned one other name in that talk there that Ross Atkins also brought up, and that was Alan Rodon. And Ross Atkins was simply asked the question, who on your farm or who of the young guys are you really excited to see? And 99% of the time when Ross Atkins is asked this question, he mutters something. We love all our prospects. Everyone's the same. People are going to get a great opportunity. But he took a change of tone and called out Alan Rodon specifically, praising about how he had jumped a few levels last year. We had Scott Belford on our show a few weeks ago now who was praising Alan Rodon, talking about how he really does believe this could be a big step forward to it. I have my thoughts on what this means, Jesse, but I want to hear yours first. Do you take anything away from Ross Atkins calling out Alan Rodon?
Well, he's pretty much preaching what all of us fans who follow, like, prospects and, like, the farm system about Alan Rodon, who are saying that he should have been on the major league roster last year, but
yeah,
because of service time, they just felt there's some service time manipulation, which it is what it is. Do I agree with it? No, but I don't get paid to do that. So, but no, like, he's a solid bat, solid defensively. He was the MVP for Buffalo last year, like, after coming out from New Hampshire. He would be a very nice piece in our outfield, but also, like, you'll probably mention too, is, like, when he usually talks to the prospects, they could be on their way out.
That's what I was going to bring up here. Like, it was very out of character for Ross Atkins to go and just mention a guy. You'll remember at the end of season press conference last year, too, he had mentioned Alan Rodon at the end of there. And the only other time in recent history, you know, I could be wrong, but I feel like Ross Atkins has gone out and mentioned a prospect that he really had his eyes on was Zach Logue, and we sent him out to trade for Matt Chapman like 2 months later. So I'm genuinely feel like Ross Atkins might be trying to bump up Alan Rodon's value. Remember, he's 25 years old. He still never made the big leagues. And for all the stuff we like in the bat, Ross Atkins never really liked Spencer Horowitz that way either. And they are kind of similar prospects in the way they hit and approach the ball. So I am thinking that also too, with the report that the next Blue Jays move is likely going to come by trade, maybe they're using Alan Rodon as a centerpiece in that trade, and that's where I'm thinking this comes from.
Oh, definitely. And, like, especially too, like, where they could be targeting for what they're going to trade for, and, like,
yeah, the Padres guys, right? They make the most
all sense. All the bunch of Padres players, they probably, like, rumors are, like, Machado or even bringing Tatis over. I'm like, we would love it, but the prices would be pretty steep.
Right. Michael King makes more sense to me. Dylan Cease probably makes more sense to me. But
see, Darvish. You
know, yeah, sure. But if it's going to be something like that, it's probably going to take a piece like that. Or there might be something that surprises us altogether. But that's what I took from all that. Jesse, some injury news come out of spring. Remember, we ended last season with Bo Bichette injured. Will Wagner was having knee surgery. Dalton Varsho was out. All things go for both Will Wagner. Reports are he's going to probably play some third base and first base this year. He was doing some first base work with Don Mattingly today. So that kind of answers our question of who plays first base behind Vlad. Will Wagner, which likely means he's almost guaranteed a spot on this opening day roster on the bench if they don't add somebody else there. That is good. Bo Bichette has had that pin taken out of his finger. John Schneider already mentioned Bo looks like Bo. All systems go for him going into this season. Dalton Varsho apparently was hitting home runs in batting practice already. With it being middle of February, that's pretty good. He is throwing from 90 feet, so they're still not certain that he'll be ready for opening day, but it does seem like Dalton Varsho is progressing pretty well from that shoulder injury. That is good news. And then one piece of maybe not so good news, that's relief pitcher Eric Swanson has been dealing with a little bit of a forearm issue. It seems like he will be behind the others, but all systems point that he will still be good to go for opening day. I bring that up, Jesse, because he had a very broken spring last year and led to his worst season, and the bullpen kind of needs Eric Swanson to become good again. So take Eric Swanson and then all the positives we have there. Do you have a takeaway from these injury reports coming out of spring?
Definitely good to hear about Varsho being throwing 9 feet. Yes, it's not nowhere where his arm should be, being a center fielder or outfielder in general, but it is progress. And like they've said, like by the end of May, like end of April, May, he could be back. Late is the All-Star break, so like by sounds of it, that he's on schedule.
I'd say probably earlier than the All-Star. Yeah, unless there's a setback. Yeah.
Yeah, no, exactly. And also, like, how they want to do his rehab stints and all that. The bow, like, bow being bow, that's what we wanted to see. But until we see him in the regular season doing what we know what bow can do, I won't buy it. The Swanson one, tell me something I haven't heard before about his form. Because, like, this is, sounds exactly like last year. Mm-hmm. Hopefully they really take it slow compared to last year and just rushing them in and doesn't have any setbacks, especially even like with what happened last year. So I really, he can't have for what he had last year with what people know and what happened with his son and all that.
Yeah.
But they need to take the forearm situation slower this time, because with how bad he was last year, he needs the proper time to recover so he can be what he was in 22.
I'm with you on
or
that.
Or 23, right, I should say.
Yeah, because if we can somehow get the Eric Swanson who was really good his first year here in Toronto, then we're laughing. I've been on record saying I don't think that guy's ever coming back, and this forearm injury makes that case seem more likely. We will see with Eric Swanson. The only other notes, Jesse, I picked up out of the first day of pitchers and catchers reporting today. One is that John Schneider said Orelvis Martinez will probably play second or third base this year. Remember, he got into the big leagues at third base his first year here. It's going to be a lot for a guy who's not that good defensively. And with Andrés Giménez, second base seems pretty much taken care of already. However, John Schneider did also add, if he hits, he's going to play. So if the bat plays, he'll find his way into the lineup. And the other thing, when Spencer Horowitz was traded earlier this offseason, Ernie Clement and Davis Schneider needed a new roommate, and it appears that they found one. Joey Loperfido will be moving in with the two of them. So we have a new group of roommate trios, I suppose, but they made sure they still gave all love to Spencer Horowitz, as he's welcome there anytime. So the roomies live on. Joey Loperfido gets welcome to the club.
The three best friends that anyone can have.
It's a thing of beauty, right? Just a bunch of boys hanging out playing baseball. What's not to love?
Yeah, like they're the three guys that probably are the most like especially Ernie Clement, the most like all of us. Just like he's a baseball player, but he more acts like the fans and his like personal life, and just even the way he acts on the team is just like, I'm here for the good time and let's have some fun.
No, that's exactly it. I bet you that house would be a lot of fun. Joey Loperfido, too, just seems like a chill guy. He'd be nice to go out and hang out with, have a beer with. I bet you if the Blue Jays ever do clinch, say, that AL East this year, win that World Series title, you can bet they're having a party at that house this year. And that would be definitely where I would want to be. Yeah, if I was getting in there. So good for them. Those are all the takeaways I had from the first week of spring training. Jesse, was there anything else that caught your attention from the first?
No, it just hasn't. I think we've hit everything, and just with the excitement and knowing that baseball, the season is around the corner, and especially next Saturday is the first spring training game.
Mm-hmm. We're very much looking forward to that. I will have all my eyes. My two eyeballs will be glued to the TV. I'm so excited to see these minor league guys pitch. Like, watch Mason Fluharty come in and pitch two innings. I don't care. It's going to be fantastic. Give me some Damiano Palmagiani. Like, I am ready to watch these guys.
Here's Earth Carter.
Some Irv Carter, baby. Like, let's go. I will be locked in to see some of that. I cannot wait to see live baseball again on my television. It'll be fantastic. All right, Jesse, let's take a look now one final time at the offseason that just was for the Toronto Blue Jays. We said at the end of last season that this offseason was going to be very polarizing. And boy, the offseason did not start so good, as the Blue Jays were missing out on players left and right. We thought we were interested in Corbin Burns. He went elsewhere. Juan Soto, he went elsewhere. And there were a few more misses in there as well. But ultimately, the Blue Jays did add and did subtract. And I'm just going to go through the names here, Jesse, in chronological order. Some are much more minor, and then some are much more major, but I'm just going to go through the names of all the additions here. And yeah, if you hear one you like that catches your attention, obviously we'll hit the big ones, but if you hear one you like, just stop me, all right?
Sounds good.
All right. The first addition we made was signing Michael Stefniak. He was an infielder from the Angels to a minor league deal. We got right-handed pitcher Kevin Gowdy. And then we made the big trade, and I guess we should talk about this one here, and that was Andrés Giménez and Nick Sandlin entered our team. Andrés Giménez is going to be our everyday starting second baseman. Nick Sandlin is going to be a bit of vital role in the bullpen. Jesse, 30 seconds. Give me your thoughts on those two players and how they'll affect our team.
Like I've said before, I'm excited to see Giménez. Like I said, I feel like he could possibly be what Rami Almar was for the Jays in the 1993 season. And definitely he'll have to hit, which I feel like Popkins will be able to like unleash that from him again.
Okay, good.
And for Sandlin, definitely has a better left splits against lefties, and I think with his splitter and all that, which should be a really nice piece to the bullpen to face the lefties, since we don't have many lefties in the pen.
Just gives John Schneider another option out of the pen, and the Blue Jays desperately needed some guys out of that pen. That will definitely help. And I'm really warming up to Andrés Giménez. The Blue Jays believe in the bat, and I keep looking at that year he had 2 years ago, and I understand there were some things he did that was not sustainable, but I can't help but wonder we're going to get at least a W10 WRC plus out of that bat. And if that happens, oh boy, I'm going to love Andrés Giménez on this team. He's going to be fun to watch. Can't wait to see him. The next move we got was bringing back Jimmy Garcia. And Jesse, we love King Jimmy. Glad to have him back. Very good here. Is he automatically your eighth inning guy ahead of Jeff Hoffman?
I would definitely put him there. If not, he'd be seventh. But I know we love him, but the people at the Rogers Center love him more, so they don't have to do a new light show for him.
Well, Jeff Hoffman's going to have to get a light show this year. So the fact that they're going to have both in that bullpen is great. So two thumbs up for Jimmy Garcia. Glad to have him back. We added right-handed pitcher Angel Bastardo in the Rule 5 draft, who you'll remember is hurt, but will be on the big league roster late in the season, or else the Blue Jays have to send him back to Boston. So keep that in mind. Some minor league deals. Eric Lauer was a name we talked about before that could get a start or two this season. Ali Sanchez was a starter. Remember, we signed Josh Walker, who was a left-handed relief pitcher who had some interesting things. We brought him in here. Then later, we signed Jeff Hoffman. So he is going to be our closer. We've talked lots about Jeff Hoffman this offseason. Jesse, this might be the one move we've made this offseason that I am still the most excited about. I don't think we've talked enough about just how nasty Jeff Hoffman is going to be, and he's going to be dominant back there in that back end of that bullpen.
As I've said before, like with Hoffman, off we go. He literally, yes, the Giménez and Garcia transactions like started our offseason, but our transactions and offseason like success really started close to Hoffman, and like all off for the races we went for signings.
Your puns are in midseason mode, Jesse. I love having that there, and I expect they'll be there all season. Jeff Hoffman is by far the move the Blue Jays have made all offseason that I am the most excited about. And the Blue Jays' run of closers actually has been pretty good over the past like 10, 15 years or so, right? From like Roberto Osuna to Ken Giles to Jordan Romano. We've always seemed to have had that good guy at the back end of our pen, and that is going to continue with Jeff Hoffman here. So very excited for that, assuming that shoulder holds up. And then some other moves we made. The next one was Miles Straw, which is not currently on the 40-man roster. And that whole thing is, it is what it is, but he can't hit worse shit, but he can run the bases and he can play a good defense. So there's that for Miles Straw. getting paid a lot of money to do it. And then we signed Anthony Santander, who I think if you asked the majority of Blue Jays fans, that is the move they're probably most excited about. Tony Taters, 80 grade nickname on this team. So tell me about those two, Jesse. Anthony Santander and Miles Straw.
Well, Miles Straw was a I have no words for that because I'm so sour about the reason why we had to get him.
Right.
But for, no, Tony Taters, like, it's the power bat, like, the probably the best power bat available other than Pete Alonso. Like, he was the number one power bat. He was coveted by Ross in front office from the get go. Have a history with them too from the Cleveland days. Like, he's definitely the insurance policy, like insurance policy behind Vladdy when it comes to like who you're gonna face. And yes, he's not the greatest defender, but I feel like I've seen enough clips too of him making some good plays in the outfield where I think he can be viable.
Yeah, the thing with Anthony Santander is like when we look at what to expect from him next season, like none of us think he's going to hit 44 home runs next year. Like we think 44 is going to be his career high, but we all think he's going to hit out in the 30s. And I was looking at his stats the other day, Jesse. Last season, he hit 44 home runs and 25 doubles. So that's what, 69 home runs and doubles combined?
Nice.
The year, a very nice one indeed. The year before in 2023, he only hit 28 home runs, but also hit 41 doubles. You add those two numbers up together, that's also 69. So I think we're going to get 69 doubles and home runs combined. And do the math on that. That's what, 34 and 35 of one or the other. And so we're getting mid-30s home runs from Tony Taters. Sign me up. I'll take that. So that's what I think we're going to
exactly. get. Exactly. And a promotional genius with that nickname too.
I'm actually, this is off topic, but I'm trying to think of a way we could have like Taters Corners or something, or where we can make like a small section of the Rogers Center, like the Santander fan club, like the Tater Tots section or something. I'm working on it there. And if anyone listening has an idea, I'd love to hear it. But yeah.
The Spud Club.
The Spud Club. Man, yeah, maybe you're onto something. We'll get marketing on the phone here and we can work on that. But I think that would be great for Anthony Santander. And then some minor moves the Blue Jays have made since then. We signed Richard Lovelady, who we talked about, who could be an interesting part on this. Yep. As Valentine's Day is about 20 minutes away from now, there's probably some puns that could be made there. We signed Christian Bethencourt, who I think we both think is going to be our backup catcher going into camp. Then we signed Adam Klopfenstein to a minor league deal. Max Watley, who I just looked at the Blue Jays transaction list. Apparently, we signed him. He's a catcher. I had no idea with him. And then Max Scherzer, obviously, was the other one, the big name we started the episode with. So, Jesse, out of all those additions the Blue Jays have made to their team, three questions. One, give me the one you think is going to have the most impact. Two, give me your favorite under-the-radar addition here. And three, is that enough? Did we do enough adding to this team to take us forward?
I think the biggest impact will definitely be Tony Taters, because it'll give that insurance policy, like I said, and like just make pitchers actually pitch to Vladdy and not try to pitch Kirk where it was a ground ball, a double play. Probably the most underrated one that people really aren't talking much about is Nick Sandlin. Like, I feel like he is going to be one of those kind of like how back in the day, like how Aaron Loop was just. Like was or Brett Cecil type, where like just got the job done. Had like there was like, nothing sexy about him and all of that. Like just like seeing the name and say, oh okay. But then because it's one of the best ones. Or even like how like Steve Delabar the 1 year too, like
All Star. Just one Delabar, of the, might I add.
Exactly. Raise the bar for Delabar.
Go on. And did the Blue Jays do enough? Do you think?
I think we just did enough. Like we're right at the close where I feel like I wish he did a little more, but I'm also happy with the pieces he added.
Yeah, I still think we're missing one more high impact bat here. However, this does still leave opportunity for a Will Wagner, for a Relvis Martinez, for an Addison Barger to get playing time to really burst on the scene here. And I think the Blue Jays were very careful with wanting to leave room for that to happen. You can include Alan Roden in that list or insert your Stuart Baroa or Leo Jimenez, whoever you might like. The Blue Jays were trying to leave room in that for this, and I think they've done that, and they're kind of hoping for a breakout on one of those. To answer the questions for myself, Jeff Hoffman is my answer. I think that is the best move the Blue Jays have made this offseason, assuming there's nothing wrong with his physical or whatnot. I think Jeff Hoffman's just going to be absolutely dominant. And I want to give a very low-key shout-out to, I think, the best move we made that no one's talking about it, and that's Richard Lovelady. Has gone to Driveline, has added so much velocity to his stuff. He could be a very good, consistent bullpen guy out of here that no one's talking about. But there's also the chance, too, he just doesn't make the team out of camp. So, well, let's watch him this spring, but could be a very interesting name to go for. And I mentioned off the top that I think the Jays have done enough. Is there any move here, Jesse, for the additions that you think we're going to regret? That was a bad decision for us to make. I mean, Miles Straw is the answer, right? For the money.
That's literally the only reason. Like, because he's like, you know, it's bad when you have him, like, you trade for him and you won't even come on the 40-man roster before, like after you acquire him. Like, there's a little issue there.
He's got to be the most expensive Buffalo Bison we've had probably ever in franchise history. But that is definitely the answer there. All right. And then to make all these additions, we did have to lose a bunch of players. We don't have to spend too much time on these. But guys who were on the team last year who will not be on the team this year include Ryan Yarbrough, Luis Frias, Luis De Los Santos, Genesis Cabrera, Emmanuel Ramirez, Dylan Tate, Jordan Romano, Spencer Horowitz, outfield prospect Nick Mitchell, Nick Rapsodo, the catcher, Hagen Danner, Brett DeGus, Brandon Eisert, and I believe the guy we just, Michael Peterson, I believe his name is, who we just cut off the 40-man to sign Max Scherzer, has also gone as well. Jesse, out of those names, is there one name we're going to look at on here and really regret this upcoming season that we lost here this offseason?
If he's healthy and back to what he used to be or was, probably Jordan Romano in the back end, even though we were all late. If you on him for the longest time, because he always had the most stressful night things ever. Possibly also Spencer Horowitz when he's healthy again, too, because I feel like he could have been a nice piece. But again, with all how clustered our middle infield is at first, is, I don't understand why we let him go.
Yeah, don't forget, Spencer Horowitz was our second best hitter last season behind Vladimir Guerrero Jr., and we struggled on offense, and we decided to let that go. I understand the positional fit was tough. He was never a second baseman and all that stuff too, but he produced. I remember he had a series in Atlanta where he single-handedly carried the Blue Jays to winning that series. So wish him nothing but the best over there in Pittsburgh, which should be a fun, exciting team. Mike, answer here, Jesse, is one minor one we're not really talking about is Hagen Danner, who we talked a lot about early this offseason when he did go to Seattle. I still like the guy. I still think he has the stuff to be in the back end of a bullpen. And I think, you know, he's going to be a guy for Seattle over the course of the season here.
Oh, definitely. Like, I was saying he was going to, like, lead the team in saves before we signed Hoffman. And it's like, that's how much I believe in him. And also him being a catcher before he even was a closer, too. It's like, I'm still in shock that we DFA'd him over like Zach Poop and Rick DeGus, like, or even like some of the other players we like DFA'd. Like, he was the one before him, and like I still don't understand that.
Yeah, I mean, eventually all those little middle relief names got down too, so maybe he was never going to survive the offseason, but ultimately he's gone to Seattle where he should perform, and you know, he'll be competing for a spot with them this spring here. Now, Jesse, do you think we did enough? Because I know I already asked that question, but like, we didn't sign Corbin Burnes, Max Fried, Pete Alonso, Roky Sasaki, and some other names. You know, like, there are some names we notably missed on. Do you think we're going to look back at the end of this season and think, boy, we really just should have paid the money to get Max Fried or gone for the extra years for Pete Alonso or something like that? Do you think there's going to be a name that we missed out on here?
That's tough. I really feel like the only one I'm saying, like, I wish we did get and, like, would possibly be Sasaki just because of how cheap he was and how long we could have him for such a low price. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, the unknown of coming over from Japan and, like, who knows how he'll actually be, because we've seen a lot of Japanese pitchers succeed, yes, and also a lot of them fail, too. So, like, we don't know which ladder it was. We assume he'd be, like, the best pitcher, ever. There's that one, or even possibly the Corbin Burnes one, which could possibly help impact our rotation.
Yeah, I'm going to go Juan Soto over here just because it's literally Juan freaking Soto. You're buying a Hall of Fame plaque, but I understand that type of case doesn't go by ever. And if they use that money to re-sign Vlad, then maybe we're looking at a different story. But I think we've done okay. I think we're going to be all right with the moves we did make here. Jesse, let's talk prospects. Back end of the episode, we were going to develop a whole episode for prospects here, but the calendar comes quick and it gets to us before we even know it. And with spring training on the horizon, we're actually going to see a lot of these prospects here in spring. So I figured this was a good time to talk about the Blue Jays farm system just a little bit. Now, overall, we're not a great farm system. We have talked recently about, I think, one of the biggest struggles in the Mark Shapiro, Ross Atkins era is that we just simply haven't developed enough prospects to go through there, particularly on the pitching side. So keep that in mind. But there are some names in here, Jesse, and I just went to Scott Mitchell's TSN list. I think we should look at those top five. We'll talk each about those, see what their future could be, what they look like. Will they have an impact this year? And then you and I can kind of spitball back and forth deeper in this list, because I know there are some names deeper that you and I both like as well. But Jesse, I guess take your favorite prospect or who you think is number one on this list, and we'll go from there.
Well, I feel like number one would have to be that's why I'm saying I was going to say that, but
okay, it's Treya Savage, who was just taken first overall last year. 21 years old, first round pick, 20th overall. He had an ERA of like 2 down there. He was a projected top 10 pick, but remember he had I think it was a lung issue or something in his medical.
Yeah, a punctured lung.
Punctured lung, yeah. But it goes back there. But it all seems like he is a fairly polished college arm. He has the chance to move quickly. I think like an Alek Manoah comp here, where he just came in and he just rolled and he was in the big leagues a year and a half after being drafted. You and I have talked before about we think the Blue Jays should be very, very aggressive with Treya Savage. And I want to see him start next season in Double A. Like, I want to see him there. Put him there, because what if he's just good? What if he's still got it and he can go? And then he could potentially help your team this season, if not early next season. And I think that's good. But what do we need to know, Jesse, about Treya Savage this year?
Well, definitely a big body pitcher, like competitive, like has that like I'll call it like the Max Scherzer style dog in him. Like he will get his paycheck by doing like pitching complete games, striking out people. And you say Double A, I would say almost do what they did with Paul Skeens and have him just start in Triple A.
He's not Paul Skeens, though, is the thing, but because nobody's Paul Skeens, right? But you want to test this guy and you want to see if he can do it.
No, well, they did that with Manoah. They had him start in Triple A and pitch 6 games, and then we brought him up and look what he was those first 2 years. So why don't you use this? If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Like, try to put him up there and see if he can be that.
The Blue Jays historically, historically they have been pretty aggressive with their pitcher placement. And a guy who's got the fastball that can touch high 90s and a guy who has a splitter, like, you at least want to see him somewhere in camp this year, sitting with Kevin Gausman, sitting with Bowden Francis, just to talk about that pitch. Because if he can get the most out of these pitches, you could be looking at a very good pitcher with Treya Savage. I will say, though, Jesse, there's no such thing as a pitching prospect. So do with that what you will. You know, he might not develop into the ace. Remember, Nate Pearson was supposed to be this guy, and we've been dreaming on Ricky Tiedemann for each of the last 3 years now, and we'll touch on him here next. But it seems tough. So just keep that in mind about Treya Savage.
Oh, definitely. Like, he can be, like, we would like to be him, but again, there's no such thing as a pitching prospect. Like, we can even go back to the past, like Chris Carpenter and stuff like that. Where were they were
highly touted, but was another one.
Exactly.
There was
Thomas Hatch and all that.
Yeah, Tom, who had a good run with the Cubs. And I even remember John Harris was supposed to be this big safe pick. Blue Jays got never made the big league. So the Blue Jays really need some good starting pitching development here. Number two on this list is Arun Namala, who is quite young, still just 19 years old, kind of struggled for a little bit last year, then really turned it on late in the year. On May 12th, he was hitting like 167, struck out 43 times in 108 at-bats, and then something just clicked. The power grew, the thing dreamed. He shows the ability to, you can start kind of seeing here a power hitting shortstop who could hit you 30 home runs. I give the comp here of like a Miguel Tejada, who does have an MVP under his belt, of the guy who could be like a power hitting shortstop. So I like him. A long way to go. Still just 19. Like I said, he'll probably start the season in high A Vancouver, but you can dream on this guy. This guy's got all the tools coming out of India. Should be very good, and should, if he can refine that hit tool and take another step forward this year, should be a very, very good prospect.
No, definitely. I'll use this term from like back in the league basketball days. He's a year away from being a year away.
Yes.
But like for me, I always said, like, from watching him and the comp I would have him, it would be like Afonso Soriano.
Okay. Yeah, I don't hate that either. Their swing is very different, but in terms of like the results and stuff, the power speed combo you might get from a position up the middle, I can see where you're getting at.
Yeah, like definitely, and just like the frame too, like because both are like tall, like lanky, shortstop. Mm-hmm. So I feel like it could be a like combo. Like hopefully, what like even Francisco Lindor says about him, like how he will be a star at a shortstop. Mm-hmm. If that fails there, maybe he'll be become like an outfielder, like what we did with Lourdes Gurriel.
Yeah, move him to the outfield and still becomes a good hitter, because Lourdes Gurriel came up as a shortstop as well. So it's very interesting to see. I look at prospects of all of them are lottery picks. So you want to have the prospect in there that if everything goes right, could be a franchise changer for you. And Arun Namala has that in the bag. So I want to see if we can get closer to seeing more of that this year. Next on this list, Jesse, Ricky Tiedemann, who when he pitched into that spring training game last year, Jesse, you and I talked about this frequently. We were so excited from what we saw from Ricky Tiedemann in that spring outing. Looked really good. I think he struck out Bryce Harper, if I remember correctly. Like, he did some very good things here, and then just disaster last season. He got hurt. I think he went for Tommy John, UCL injury. It looked like for the second year in a row, he was on the doorstep of being able to help contribute to the big league team. Now this year, he's probably not going to pitch until after the All-Star break. And even then, he's going to have to get his innings lined up. Worth noting, still just 22 years old, still quite young, still has a chance to come up here and develop, still probably has that high-end starting pitcher potential. But we need to start to see it, I think, from Ricky Tiedemann, or else we're going to get that prospect fatigue a little bit.
No, definitely. Like I've even said, like with how he has not been able to pitch deep in any of the levels. So yes, I know it's uncommon to pitch deep into games as a prospect in the minors. Mm-hmm. I feel like he's going to end up being a back in the rotation, possibly a closer with the way he pitches, and not a starter.
Yeah, and that sucks, because I've loved the upside, and I look at that low arm slot lefty, what he could do. I see like glimpses of Sean Manaea in there. Like I see a little bit of Chris Sale in there. Like you could really see it if everything goes well. But I've said this with the Blue Jays too. I think they used Nate Pearson as a starter for too long when everyone was just screaming, put him in the bullpen. And I think we could be getting closer to that point with Ricky Tiedemann. I think by this time next year, we will know for sure about Ricky Tiedemann, whether or not he's going to be a starter long-term, or if he could be that dominant, like Josh Hader type lefty reliever out of a pen, which would still be a very good career for him. We just got to see him get on the field and get healthy. That is priority one for Ricky Tiedemann.
No, definitely. As long as he's healthy and can actually do what we expect him to do, then that's what matters first. And not thinking if we can't get to stay healthy, then why are we hyping him up so much if he's just going to be a Band-Aid?
Right. And like the best ability is availability, right? And if you're not on the field, all your tools and have do not matter if you can't stay on there. The next two names on this list, Jesse, we actually don't need to spend much time on because we've kind of already talked about them both. Number four is Aurelvis Martinez. Number five is Allan Rodin, both of who we've talked to about. Allan Rodin might have the best contact tool out of everyone in the farm system. The man rarely swings and misses, can hit the gaps pretty well. 136 WRC plus over the last 2 years. He will get a big league look this year if he's still on the Blue Jays. And Aurelvis Martinez, 23 years old going into this year, probably has the best power out of everybody that's on here. If he gets a chance to go and the power continues, he could look really good. Do you have a quick thought on either of those two before we dive into any others here?
Should be interested to see what they can do and some more at ABs during spring training and see if they can break camp. But or if they're going to be sent out in a package for someone that, like, they're saying that that's our next move.
These two players will be very interesting to watch this spring. And I think next episode we're going to do, like, our players we're most excited to watch for this spring. I guarantee you both of these players are going to be quite high on that list. So stay tuned for that, and we will talk a little bit more about them. But those are the top five Blue Jays prospects, according to Scott Mitchell at TSN. Jesse, we know the farm has a lot more players, a lot more interesting players that we haven't even mentioned. So I think you and I can just go back and forth. We'll each pick like two or three names here that we're really excited that we think could have an impact, whether it be this year or long-term for the Toronto Blue Jays. And you can go first.
Definitely the first one I'm thinking of is Charles McAdoo, like the prospect we picked up in the IKF trade. Last year, he 6'1", plays third base, can also play corner outfield, has pop. I definitely think he can possibly make it up, like make his debut this year if there's injuries or like if the season's a loss. Like, I feel like he could possibly do that. If not next year, he'll be a major impact when it comes to like the third base position.
Yeah, a former 13th round pick, a guy who really soared up draft boards through Pittsburgh last year. The problem is, like, he only hit 185 in his 37 games since coming over to the Blue Jays last year. But I think give him some time, give him adjustment, put him back in New Hampshire again. There is a non-zero chance you can see him up here because scouts did love Charlie McAdoo quite a bit. And behind Aurelvis Martinez, he might have the second best pop out of any prospect in the farm system. Jesse, I think I agree with you on that one there. I wanted to go kind of deeper into the board here of just prospects I really like. And I wanted to talk about Jaron Watts-Brown, who was starting in High A Vancouver last year. He's 23. I believe he went to the Arizona Fall League a little bit this year. 21 starts with a 4.72 ERA down in High A doesn't excite you at all, but I see a devastating slider and a very reliable heater that can have that high ride on that fastball, that good stuff on the slider. It could be very good. I'm expecting him to get into the New Hampshire Fisher Cats rotation this year, and just 23 years old, the former third round pick, I do believe he could be looking at a jump this year. Maybe not as a starting pitcher, but could definitely have a future as a bullpen arm. And Jaron Watts-Brown is a name I want to make sure we pay attention to.
Well, definitely one of the more deeper prospects we have, but definitely if you follow Jason prospects, that's a name you hear a lot of, Bill.
Mm-hmm. All right, Jesse, give me your next one. Who's another prospect we should be paying attention to?
Another shortstop prospect that's not named Arjun Demala is Josh Kasevich. Mm-hmm. He's one of the top defensively gifted shortstop prospects we have in our system. His bat is still developing, but it has started to come around. I feel like if we do end up shipping Bo or Bo leaves in free agency and Jimenez doesn't go to shortstop, I feel like it'll be a case of it's stronger to lose, and like he'll definitely get some serious looks into this year and possibly push some of our middle depth infielders who will have either options or don't have options and possibly push them out of the organization, like the players like Schneider or Leo Jimenez, and those types could possibly be behind Kizvich in the depth chart if he continues to develop like he has the last few years.
I like the call, Jesse. I really do. I don't think there was a Blue Jays prospect that rose more in prospect rankings than Josh Kasevich last year. The former second round pick was very good. The defense has always been there, and I think he started to improve people with the bat. And think about the Blue Jays shortstop depth chart right now. You mentioned like Bo Bichette, number one. Number two is probably Leo Jimenez, and Josh Kasevich might be number three on that list. If Bo Bichette, for example, has another injury plague season, you could be looking at extended big league time for the guy who is now 24, probably doesn't have much more to prove in the minor leagues. We could be looking at a big league debut this season for Josh Kasevich.
Oh, definitely. And like, if he can perform the way he's been the last few years, he'll be up here in no time.
Okay. And then for my second one, and boy, I do have a lot of names I really want to shout out here, but I'm going to go with just a personal favorite of mine. And that is Lazaro Estrada, who will likely be starting in AAA Buffalo this year. 26 years old. He's a former international free agent out of Cuba. So I don't know how high the upside could be, but I think I just like this guy just because he threw a no hitter last year, and the Blue Jays haven't had a guy throw a no hitter in forever. Lazaro Estrada did that. And, it's not just the name Estrada, but if you look at the way he can do things, is he's very good at spinning the baseball, elite spin rates on that curveball. He gets that rising heater, which, you know, I love, and pairs it with a very good changeup. It's a very safe, a very good three pitch mix, which, for a Blue Jays, a Blue Jays system that is really lacking starting pitching depth, Lazaro Estrada could be a guy that it wouldn't surprise me if he has like the Maximo Castillo run where he comes in here and makes a good start or two. The upside isn't that high. I get that, but he's just a name I like, and he's going to be one of my guys for this season.
No, definitely. If he can throw no hitter, you know you have stuff, but like again, too, TJ Zoik did the same thing, and
that is true.
So like I say that with a grain of salt.
Good point. Humble me a little bit. He is lower down on the prospect list, but I do like the guy, and I want to be called out from that. Jesse, one more name deep in the system here that that you should think we should keep an eye on.
Until he's not a Blue Jay, I'm going to still have an eye out on him and see if he can finally develop to what I thought he would, and that's Tucker Tobin. Like, he's been one of my prospects of favorite since we drafted him 2 years ago. He's definitely his age 20 season. Hopefully he can figure it out and like possibly move up the system and hopefully maybe even get it up to New Hampshire. Yes, I say a lot with how much he struggled the last few years, but he's just someone I've been following for years, and even before we even drafted him, while he was playing on the Philly scale team with like Brandon Barriera, Drew Jones, Elijah Green, and all that. So he's definitely the one prospect I've been following.
Yeah, that's deep down the list here. Still, though, 22 years old, and I remember when we drafted Tucker Tobin, there were a lot of people who saw what you saw in him, the college bat who looked like he really had it all put together. He just, I don't know what it is. Maybe he just fell apart, or maybe he couldn't do the pressure, but you know the talent is in there somewhere, and maybe it just takes one adjustment from a scout or something to make things click for him. So I do like that call on Tucker Tobin. I'm rooting for the guy, and it'll be a hell of a story if he can get it. Other names that we should probably just make sure we mention here. Landon Moraitis, 20 years old. He got hurt. He has Tommy John. He won't be patching in like Brandon Barriera and like Ricky Tiedemann. But another name to know from a right hand, that's pretty good. Jesse, neither of us talked about Jake Bloss, who was the big name that we got called over in the Yusei Kikuchi trade last year, who pitched a lot last season, who the Blue Jays wanted to get a big league look last year, couldn't quite do it. He'll be one of our top arms down in AAA. Give me a quick take on Jake Bloss.
Definitely be interesting to see what he does in some outings this spring. Like you said, he was a big piece of the Kikuchi trade, but it should be interesting to see if he's figured it out and like what the struggles he had in Buffalo. Let's see if he figured that out. Then for me, there's a couple other prospects I was thinking of. RJ Schreck or Jacob Sharp, who we both got in trades this last season. I believe Schreck came in the Yimmy Garcia trade.
Yes, he did.
And Jacob Sharp, I believe, came in the Danny Jansen trade to the Red Sox. Like, he was a catching prospect. Had a solid outings with Vancouver last year with when he joined the organization. And RJ Sharp just had one of the best pimp job home runs last year. And I just want to see. And they're saying he could possibly push for a roster spot, too, behind Alan Roden.
Yeah, RJ Schreck was Justin Turner, but we got the team right. We knew we came from the Mariners prospect. Very good there. I'm with you on those guys. Just other names I wanted to shout out. Adam Macko is on the 40-man, the guy we got from Teoscar Hernandez way back when. He's on the edge of contributing this year. A lot of the relief-type names I liked. TJ Brock was a name I really liked. He is now TJ on the IL. He's hurt. Yeah, so that is tough. A lot of the Blue Jays prospects have really hurt. I want to give a shout out to first baseman prospect Peyton Williams. Big body, guy can mash.
Though. I love meat market.
Yes, we like him. We are a fan of him there as well. And one more name I just wanted to make sure we mention here is Desaun Brown, who you'll know I will really like, is going to get into AA. He might be the best defensive center fielder in the system. Combine that with speed and a bat-to-ball tool, you could be looking at Dalton Pompey 2.0. But for guys like us who love the skills and love the talent, just another name you should know from the Blue Jays prospects.
Well, definitely. And even one that made a debut last year, so prospect is Jonathan Class A when you talk about tools too.
Yes, worth noting for Jonathan Class A. I think you and I are both fans. I was at the game. He hit his first big league home run. You can see it. And with, honestly, too, with Kevin Kiermaier, which we didn't mention, coming in and joining an outfield defensive coach, I don't think there's anybody in the system who benefits more than that than Jonathan Class A. So worth noting that those two going hand in hand could help develop for Jonathan Class A, still incredibly young, who I still think better than Jake Bloss might be the best piece we acquired at that trade deadline last year. So very excited to see that.
Oh, definitely. And especially I remember that game where he just slid over the base and we're like, well, we've never seen that before. Well, that's fun.
Mm-hmm. And he does things on the baseball field no one else can do, which is what you want more of on the ball diamond. All right, that'll wrap it up for our prospects report there. That'll actually do it for our episode here today. Jesse, we are 4 days from Vladimir Guerrero Jr.'s proposed days to get a deal done. So if it happens, you can bet we're going to try to get back on here and do it live. We will see. Either way, next week on our episode, we're going to just draft some players who we are excited to see this spring, who we are excited to follow. We're hoping to get on a special guest or two to join us in that episode. So stay tuned for that. A lot of big things coming from the channel, a lot of big things coming from us, and a lot of big things coming from the Blue Jays community as well. So make sure you like the video, subscribe to the channel, and thank you everybody who listened and commented and stuck along with us for this video. Jesse, anything to shout out before we get out of here today?
Well, it's great to see that baseball season's here. Mm-hmm. Spring is in the air, even though there's a foot of snow, but yeah. if you guys want to connect with us, hit us up on the socials, either on here or you comment on here, and we'll definitely love to interact with you. But yeah, thanks everyone for watching, and here's to a good season.
Let's go, Blue Jays. We are looking forward to it. For Jesse Treso, I'm Jesse Burrell. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back next week. Until then, let's go, Blue Jays.
Thanks, guys.